Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. Today with us, we have Noelle Maring, who is an author, editor, and freelance writer with a background in philosophy. She writes frequently on culture, politics, and religion. She and her husband live in Ventura, California with their 6 children, and today we'll be speaking about the book she co-authored with Cary Gress and Megan Shriver, Theology of Home, Finding the Eternal in the Everyday. Welcome to the show, Noelle.
Hi, Pete. Great to be with you.
So I guess first off, this book is actually seems to have morphed into more than a book. There's an entire website built around it as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how the book came to be?
Sure. Actually, the website preceded the book in a way. It started out, we had a website called Helena Daily that I know mutual friend Cary Gress started. With the effort to just put out, she was actually looking for women, Catholic women's aggregate site where you could find sort of all sorts of various things that women are interested in, like from fashion to home decorating to, you know, things for the faith, about the faith. And she realized that there's nothing like that out there. And so started this website, Helena Daily, which is meant to be sort of like a women's magazine for Catholics. Mm-hmm. And then after doing that for several months together, she came up with the idea, just this phrase, theology of home. And we started talking about that and fleshing that out and realized how rich it was. And just, you know, even with so many cultural touch points of songs written about home and movies about the hero going home, or, you know, all the way to like the Odyssey and Odysseus. And, you know, what? So we just, the more we fleshed that out, the more rich it was became. Mm-hmm. So, the book came out of that, and then eventually we changed the online women's magazine from Helena Daily to Theology of Home after realizing that, you know, that was really what our mission was in general, mm-hmm. and it was more clearly expressing it. So that's the story behind the website and also the book.
So this might seem like a simple question, but after reading the book, I'd say it's probably not a simple answer. Why are our homes so important, particularly when it comes to our spiritual lives?
Yeah. No, it's such a good question. And it's one of those things where it feels like it's right in front of us, but it's also, you know, hidden in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because, you know, we are incarnate people. So we are journeying through this world ultimately to get to our heavenly home. But, you know, God in his goodness is giving us foretastes of what that is like in the homes that we have now. And, you know, I think we've really lost, in some ways, we are obsessed with the importance of home, and in other ways, we've utterly lost the importance. So, for example, we spend about $450 billion a year on home improvement and home decorating. You know, we are really kind of just utterly obsessed with our homes. And, mm-hmm. you know, look at the DIY network and HGTV, all these home improvement stars that have arisen up in the last 20 years. But at the same time, it seems like we're obsessed with the surface without really, and have sort of cratered our understanding of the foundation, right? So we utterly disdain generally the phrase homemaker.
Mm-hmm.
So we love our homes, but no one wants to care for the home, or we don't really respect that as a vital role. And that's not to say that every woman has to be a homemaker, but that certainly should be revered as one of the most important things you could possibly be doing with your time and your life. So to answer your question of why they're so important, I think it's because we sense that they're so important, but we don't really realize why. And so we've lost those underpinnings. And the underpinnings really are that they're meant to be places of love. So they're meant to foster relationships, nourish first and foremost our friendship with Christ, second our friendship with our husband, our love with our husbands, our and wives and our children. And then thirdly, our friendship extending beyond the home. So with our neighbors, with our friends, bringing people into the intimacy of home life. All these things with an eye of ultimately preparing us for our heavenly home. Mm-hmm. You know, that with the idea that our homes can really be a foretaste of that, but they can also, when things go wrong, they can be a foretaste of hell in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, that sounds kind of like trite, but it really is true that people carry deep wounds within them when things have gone wrong in the way that they were either raised or the way that they're living now. And why are those things so deeply wounding? So, you know, I think that we're thinking about all these things, it really is, drove home for us just how crucial this thing was that we all long for, and it's right in front of us and we all spend money on, but mm-hmm. we don't really think about why. And so your question really goes to the heart of it.
Right.
About why, you know, you're connecting that.
You know, you touched upon it there in your response. It's often thought that, you know, doing this as the role of the wife and the mother of the family, that society has now frowned upon that title and role of homemaker, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's fallen out of fashion, so to speak. Yeah. How do we overcome that so that the next generation sees value in that role? Because there is a value to it.
Yeah. I think that in some ways we have started the process of overcoming it. You know, I think for a long time we were so reactionary with, you know, the feminist movement was such a reactionary movement, and so strident in, you know, its denunciation of being a homemaker, and that really really promulgating the idea that that was a waste of life. And I think that people just through their natural lives have sort of seemed that that needs to be tempered a lot. You know, even just secular people, mm-hmm. you know, I think have sensed that that's way too strident. And I think that with the democratization of information in a way, like with, you know, I see as much as, you know, like Instagram can be sort of a silly, you know, distraction in life. It's also been a great opportunity for, you know, there's a huge community of Catholic women who are home and connect with one another, and they see each other's lives and they see an embodiment of either a woman who is, you know, 10 years ahead of her in her motherhood, or, you know, so we're seeing these images and these impressions and these new narratives being promulgated out in the culture of what this other life is like, which is really just the oldest womanly thing of being with her husband, caring for her husband and her children. And the more we see that, I think the more it becomes okay. We see that it is happy, because the culture has really done such a good job of, like, I can think of 5 movies off the top of my head where home is considered this, like, dark, oppressive place, and the man is sort of your oppressor, and you are unhappy and wanting to escape this, you know, life of middle-class values or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that image, those images have been so strongly pushed and pushed and pushed. So the more, in a way, you know, that's one of the reasons we want to do this book. It's just to say, you know, there's a real disconnect between that image and the way I understand my life to feel and my friends' lives. And I see these happy families and they're growing in generosity and really trying to grow in love, you know, and as much as we all want love, we don't really know and talk about how you achieve it. You know, you really mm-hmm. achieve it through sacrifice and generosity. And that's really, you really train for that in the life of a family. So yeah, I think just the more we get these messages out there, and so anyway, the book is sort of a response to that. We're trying mm-hmm. to show, both through pictures and through our words, really the beauty of this life,
right.
What it can be and what it can look like.
Yeah, you know, another key component of the book that I pulled out of it, and I'm sure different people pull different things out of it, is that the home can be a hub of evangelization. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Sure. We talk in the book about how, you know, in this day and age, in some ways in most ways, it's really a lot easier to get someone into your home than it is to get them into a Catholic church, right? Mm-hmm. That just seems like too far of a leap to just say, hey, why don't you come to Mass with me? Although, you know, people say, we can say that, and sometimes that might be the right thing to say. But, you know, really, I think it's through the ordinary means of friendship, just real, genuine friendship, where you're not, you know, just trying to sell them something, because I think people are really they sniff that out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a much more enjoyable relationship just to be true friends without sort of, you know, that sort of kind of a manipulation. Not that, you know, not that it has to be manipulation. Obviously, we want our friends to become Catholic, but you want them to also know that our friendship is not dependent on that. You know, I'm there for you no matter what, and I can see these beautiful things about you and support you and be encouraging to you. And so, you know, how do we most intimately build those relationships? I think it's through inviting them into our home. And just the more you open up your home and see your home as not just for yourself and your family, but actually to be open to and generous, you know, going beyond your own immediate family. You know, it's a really showing like a different type of life. And Carrie has this great story where she's talking about when she was a young single woman, she was living on her own, and this big Catholic family started inviting her over for Sunday suppers. And it was just she just felt so like drawn to their life and really was able to see like, oh, this is, you know, how they live. They're joking and they're having this amazing food and they're saying prayers. And, you know, she really saw what the life was like. And I think that embodiment is super crucial.
Mm-hmm.
So
for sure.
You know, I think we get stuck in thinking that evangelization is all about apologetics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when really, especially for women, I mean, apologetics, you know, can be crucial. They were important for me too, but oftentimes it's really relationships that are the linchpin in those conversions.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you go back to the early Christians, that's how Christianity spread, was through relationships, not necessarily through corner street preaching. It was by their lives,
right,
and their examples and their helping the sick when they were ill during the plagues in the Roman Empire. So it's historically been those relationships that have built the church.
Yes, yes. And certainly, I mean, we live in sort of a post-rational time right now, mm-hmm. so... you know, the power of beauty and story and narrative and love, you know, those are the things that are so much more compelling, it seems like, now.
Yeah, definitely.
And ever, you know, as you say, they always have been, for certain. That's why Christ didn't give us a proposition, he gave us himself, right?
Yes, exactly. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk more about the book Theology of Home. You've been listening to Breadbox Media. You'll be right back.
The history of the Catholic Church is often clouded by myth, misinformation, and missing pieces. Today, there is a renewed interest in discovering the true history of the Church, correcting the record in the wake of centuries of half-truths and noble lies. Books in the new Reclaiming Catholic History series, edited by Mike Aquilina and written by leading authors and historians, brings the Church to life, debunking the myths one era at a time. Check out the first two titles in this series, The Early Church and the Church and the Roman Empire, at AveMariaPress.com, or look for it wherever books and ebooks are sold.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf. Today we're spending it with Noelle Maring, and we're talking about the book she co-authored, Theology of Home, Finding the Eternal in the Everyday. And Noelle, in the first chapter, you speak about, not just rather interesting, the entrance to the home and its importance, the crossing of that threshold, so to speak. Can you tell us a bit about that and why that segue from the outside world to that home life is important?
Sure. Well, I think that kind of, that's such a universal moment that everyone understands, right? You can, everyone has that sense of, especially when after you've been traveling, you can be on a great trip or visiting family and having a lovely time, but when you get home, I almost always will say, even out loud, just walk around my house saying, I'm so glad I'm home. I'm just so happy to be home. And I think it's that feeling of you could be at the most wonderful host's home who says, make yourself at home and have it whatever you want. But you ultimately know that you really aren't actually at home. And when you get home, that feeling of this is where I belong. This is where, you know, I could just be completely, you know, at ease and be with the people who are most important to me in the world. And that distinction between that public and private life is, you know, I always think it really mirrors our interior life with prayer, right? So that it's where what roots us. So in the same way that, you know, we have to be rooted in our interior souls, and we, when we retreat and kind of just go to enter into dialogue with our Lord, or even actually go on a retreat, there is something that is so deeply refreshing and rooting about that time, and we're really kind of, you know, in a flurry of activity without it, without that type of root. And I think the home does that for us too, right? That we can be whoever we, whatever, be doing whatever we are in our normal day-to-day life, but if we're not ultimately rooted in the love that we have at our home, then it's going to, you know, that's, it's going to start to bleed out into our regular lives as well. You know, it's so fundamental. And, you know, I always think about, you know, my husband, when, if he, I think that he is, well, we talked about this book, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but and he really sees his home, his day out in the world, and my day, whether I'm at home or doing, you know, work outside the home.
Right.
That really, it's all for the sake of where we are, at, you know, where what we come back to. It's always for the sake of our home life. It's not that, you know, we come home just to let go and, you know, plop on the couch and have a beer. It's that this is actually the big deal. And it's, but it's, but it's, I think that rooting ultimately that is the real distinction. And, you know, we have this, there's obviously lots of analogies for this in the Bible when Christ says, I am the door. And what is that, you know, what does that really mean? That he is the way that we get to our ultimate, you know, heavenly homeland, where we're really supposed to be, where we ultimately belong, where perfect love exists. And so that sense of you entering into some other space, and what are you entering into? And it kind of just gets back to that idea of I'm either entering into heaven or hell. And so what is my home? Is it building up the people inside it to be people who can enter into that door that Christ opens for us ultimately, or is it something that is, you know, diminishing and pulling us away? And I think that's the real importance of home and what, you know, what that transition means.
You know, another interesting segment you had in that section of the book was you were looking at Matthew 6:6 and St. Teresa of Avila's Interior Castle and writing about the closing of our doors of our home and our souls to the outside world. How can we do this while not becoming secluded? Because we still have to be a part of society. We don't necessarily have to follow all of society's norms. But, and obviously we would some days not like to be part of society, but how can we make those two balance?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. I think about that a lot. I think we really need to be people who, of two things, people of prayer and people of mission. So, you know, that thing we were just talking about, that having our prayer life be the most important thing that we do in our lives, is that relationship, right? It's all about that relationship with God. And the overflow of that, I think, is that we have a mission. So God calls us to be in relationship with him, but also to spread the gospel. And so how can we use our time to really work for those two ends? Because if we let go of one without the other, then we really kind of miss the picture. And that's not to say that we're all supposed to be missionaries. Obviously, you know, cloistered monks are doing missionary work just through their prayer life, and St. Therese was able to intercede for souls without even leaving her home when she was really ill. So we can be efficacious even within just the confines of a physical location, but that's a different type of, that's still spreading the gospel, you know, and I think that what we do, what we miss is if we try to constantly be in retreat in the way that it's not retreat for the sake of love, or retreat just for the sake of fear or being overwhelmed by maybe the antagonism we experience in the world. And that one of the things I always think about too with this is that we really have no reason to be defensive. I think we can get caught up in feeling defensive about our faith and just feeling like people are against us or they're attacking us. And I really think that's a unhealthy and unhelpful posture for a Christian. You know, our faith is not dependent on someone else's assent to it. So, you know, if somebody is attacking it or is critical of it, that's, you know, that's an opportunity to pray for them, or to maybe try to see where there's an argument we can be, that can be made if a person has opened something. But it should never be something that kowtows us into retreat, I don't think, you know, mm-hmm. because I don't, you know, I just don't think that that's a posture of love. And it's also not a posture of victory. And I think we can feel that victory because we know that Christ has established that for us.
Right.
So, yeah. So that should give us a great deal of confidence, not in ourselves, but in Him and through Him, what He will do with us.
Mm-hmm. You know, the book actually goes a little beyond about beyond the home as a dwelling, but you also talk about creating a home in our parishes. And I think that's very important. You know, if you're part of a parish and you don't feel that family connection, it can hurt spiritually. So, what are some ways we can create that home in our parishes as well?
Well, I think that first and foremost, we have to feel that everything that we're trying to build in our own homes, we really ultimately find in the church, right? So, we talk about light and comfort and safety and those are really the things that we find in the church and in the sacraments that we should be finding those things ultimately in God, that we are safe because we are in relationship with Him. So practically speaking, I think in our parishes, I think sticking to one is always a good thing. I mean, for daily mass, I tend to be a church hopper out of time and convenience, but for Sundays, we really try to just stick with one place, one community. And just, I think the things that you get out of the 20 minutes or something that where people are lingering after mass and, you know, chatting and building relationship and, you know, I think really reaching out to people who might be new, people who might not be in the middle of all the circles of chatting. And, of course, different parishes, it's different everywhere. So, ours is particularly social and vibrant, which is wonderful, but it's also great for our kids because our kids just grow up with, you know, this community that's very visible, and it's not, you know, just this idea. They actually feel the sense of community. And I think, you know, as much as we can support our priests, that mm-hmm. is so crucial. Having them over for dinner, being in friendship with them, and I think they really need our support, and we can overlook that sometimes. And, you know, obviously mostly through our prayer, first and foremost, but also just seeing them as part of our real community of faith, wherever we live, is super important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need us, they need families.
Right.
And we need them. We need the sacraments. We need we need absolution. It's such a nice, beautiful, mutually, dependent relationship. And you know, our obviously there's the phrase domestic church was coined for an important reason, which is that we are really, the family is really building something up that will build up the church. To see that sort of symbiosis is crucial. And I think if we just see our church as like a vendor for the sacraments,
mm-hmm.
we miss out on something rich, right?
Right.
We miss out on all those other elements.
Yeah, definitely. Also in the book, I thought it was rather interesting, you discuss legacy and its connection to our homes and families. Can you speak to us a bit about that as we wind down the second segment here?
Sure, yeah. I think that, I think there's just this image of, you know, you see it in like Downton Abbey and like all these movies and shows that are really focused on these sort of legacies in the more stereotypical way that you think of that word. But what we're also interested in is, what is legacy just for, you know, a normal modern family? And how do we really see that, foster that sort of piety where we see the history, it's connecting us to our own history, taking us out of sort of like the slavery of the modern age, to see what has been built before us, what's repaired, and what we're building for the future. It gets us out of the now, you know,
mm-hmm.
and also to see why are these families, I think families that are like that are just super attractive. So they really have a connect. They have things around their home, like old family photographs and, you know, things, tales of what grandfather did and how he met grandmother and these beautiful stories that can be handed down and really also root our children in a sense of who they are, you know, as being part of this one particular family, but also part of the family of God. So, you know, ultimately, like as Catholics, we are part of a family lineage, and we see that through the covenants, and it helps us. I think we really miss something rich if we don't really understand ourselves in that context, part of this one family, but also part of this broader family that is historical and has really been, you know, the pinnacle of shaping Western civilization throughout time.
For sure. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media.
Marriage is ordered between one man and one woman because, like God's love, it is called to be fruitful, open to life. Well, there's a lot of confusion in the culture today, but here is some clarity in the following beautiful quote from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, 2335. Each of the two sexes is an image of the power and tenderness of God, with equal dignity, though in a different way. The union of man and woman in marriage is a way of imitating in the flesh the Creator's generosity and fecundity. End quote. Listen, be not afraid. Couples that are willing to live openness to life in their marriage will receive not only many spiritual benefits, but a very practical strengthening of their marriage. I'm Jim Littleton, formingfaithfulfamilies.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We've been spending the day with Noelle Maring discussing the book she co-authored, Theology of Home, Finding the Eternal in the Everyday. And just a little, we'll take a little sidetrack here, Noelle. This book, it was great. I consider it something different than what I normally read. I would think it's a wonderful coffee table type book. It's chock full of color photos. You alluded to that a bit. And it's actually a great evangelization tool if left out. So what was you and your co-authors, Carrie and Megan's greatest hopes for this book?
I think just what you're saying, I think we're hoping that it would be beautiful, for one thing. That was super important, that, you know, we as Catholics, we really should take a lot of ownership out of having a history of creating beautiful things. And I think we're remiss if we forget that. So we wanted it first and foremost to be beautiful in order to glorify God and to, you know, through the life of the family. And second, I think we really wanted to buoy Catholics and give some encouragement. Carrie talks about how this is sort of the flip side of her anti-Mary book, that was sort of the defensive, and this is the offensive. So this is not really defending ourselves, but just saying, hey, look at what this, you know, the beauty of this simple life. And thirdly, I think just what you say, for it to be a tool of evangelization. So just to strengthen ourselves and also to encourage people and maybe put out there that there is some attraction and something compelling about a simple, beautiful life lived with just the basic, the order of things being, first and foremost, love for God, love for family, love for each other. And then, you know, after that, what are we doing in the world? What are our careers? All these things are very good and very important, but we've sort of inverted them, right?
Right. Yeah.
We identify ourselves with our career more than the love we're establishing our families.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the second part of the book, and that gets pretty in depth, so to speak, you talk about these different elements and how they affect us in the home. And in this segment, I like to cover a couple of those. One of those that was rather interesting. You don't realize how important these things are until you're sitting there reading about them sometimes. We talk about light and the effect light has on us. What are some ways we can reap the benefits of light in the home?
Well, I think, you know, the two main things with light that we need to think about in our homes, I mean, obviously light is just a physical element, is crucial with home. People always want a well-lit home. But we really think about those as having a deeper meaning too. One being truth, you know, that we are forming ourselves in understanding of what is true and who is true. You know, so the light of Christ is really the guiding light and principle of our home. But second, I also love the image of light dancing on water. So that sort of playful, bright. It sort of combines like this element of beauty, but also, the truth, but also this joy. And I think that one of the super crucial things for Catholic homes are to be places of lightness and joy, that we're not, it's not heavy. Mm-hmm. It's full of, inside jokes. It's full of mirth, that when, that we go through our days, St. Jose Maria always talked about embracing the contradiction. So, when things go wrong, when you stub your toe or when you miss your appointment or you burn your dinner, or even more serious things go wrong, the dryer breaks more serious, but that we have a sporting spirit about those types of things and can use them both for our sanctification, but also be able to just laugh at them. And I think, we really want to send the kids out into the world thinking back on their home life as being one of the things I most want them to remember it being as cheerful and joyful. Because that's what we're attracted to. We want to live happy lives. That's just the nature of the human person. And if all your memories of your childhood in a big Catholic family were dour or heavy or dark, it's not going to be something you're going to strive for in your life.
Right, right. One of the things we hear a lot about is sitting down as a family for dinner time. Why is that so important, and what are some ways we can rediscover this ritual?
It's so important. I think it's so easy to skip over it. I'm still trying to make sure that we're making a really regular habit of it, because kids are running everywhere and every which way, and everyone's so active now. But I think it's so important because you really, when you're all around the table, there's a togetherness where you're just stopped and you're seated at this one place all together. And that's kind of when I find out the most about my kids. I have teenagers now and also little kids and one in college. And they'll start joking about something of the day that they wouldn't have just brought up if I just said, hey, how was your day? But at dinner time, it'll just kind of emerge in the conversation. And then they have a dynamic with their siblings that I'll see and be able to notice in a new way. And you can see all these little connections forming around this table. And for some reason, it really takes sitting down at a table to do that. It's something about the set amount of time, but it's also, everyone loves to eat, and it's this regular thing where you kind of come together at the end of the day. So some people do different things. I know some people always prioritize Sunday supper. And so they'll have, the weeknight meals might be, touch or go, but they always make sure that they have this slow cooked Sunday meal. So that's one way to go. People have to figure it out differently. It's going to be different for each family and different stages. But I think just having it be a habit is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Another thing you looked at I thought was pretty neat was you look at nature and safety in the context of spiritual and physical well-being. And I really liked the one quote was, quote, safety in the home is not just about what to keep out, but what to nurture within, end quote. Can you detail that a bit for us?
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that that's a common limitation on the notion of safety, just to think that it's about the negative, it's what I don't want in my life. But it's also, I think safety is meant to be, a positive thing, something that we're fostering and nurturing. One of the things I realized in talking about and thinking about both comfort and safety in particular was that, they are things that if we don't get them, we kind of spend our lives, or we can tend to spend our lives looking for them. It's stunting. But actually, when we receive them, we are more equipped to abandon them when we need to. There's that, beautiful saying about that we're not made for comfort, we're made for greatness. So obviously, our point as Christians is not to go through life seeking safety and seeking comfort, but we have to be nourished and nurtured in those things in order to sort of have the courage to be brave and to do bigger things in the world. So I think, that creating a safe home obviously is going to be a place where people are feel safe to voice their opinions, that they're not going to get barked at, that it can be a place where you can, if you're upset about something, you can bring it to your mom or your dad or your husband or your wife, and you'll be heard, and you will be, you'll feel that you're important, and that because that relationship is important. And I think sometimes out of fear or, dysfunction, we can not create places like that in our relationships. And it winds up feeling sort of emotionally unsafe, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people get very frustrated when they can't communicate.
Mm-hmm. You know, another area that you cover in this book, you talk about order and order in the home. And when I was reading that section, I immediately thought about the decluttering phenomenon out there.
Yeah.
Why is this order so critical? I think we, you know, understand we get this feeling of chaos when we don't have it, but why is it so critical?
I think it's really because it's just God is ordered, right? So, and you bring up an interesting thing with the decluttering phenomenon, because it does seem like we're all so focused on that. And partially, I think maybe because we've become so decadent. So we have so many things, we shop so much, reading so many things in our home, that it sort of seems like the pendulum has to swing to the other side. You know, that instinct is real, but I think that there's, you know, the chaos is the obvious deterrent, but also because if we want beauty, we need to foster order. So we talk in the book about, you know, that artists, we have this sort of modern notion that to make something beautiful, you have to be this crazy artist who's undisciplined and, you know, just has a life of chaos. But really, traditionally, historically, craftsmanship was built out of great discipline. So how do we be disciplined in our spiritual lives, but also in our physical lives? So in our home and with our habits, being ordered with our time, being ordered with our belongings, as a way to honor God, you know, to be good stewards of our things, to be good stewards of our lives, but still with the idea of, you know, this is different from perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's easy to get caught up in that. And the problem there, obviously, is that we are seeing the order as the greatest good rather than order being a means towards harmony in our relationships and harmony in our souls and in our interior lives. So perfectionism sort of puts it above everything else rather than in the proper place.
Mm-hmm. And there was another quote in the book that I really liked, and that was this, quote, "Our homes are not meant to be mere launch pads for our success in the world. Rather, end quote. And that was a great one. Can you unpack that a bit for us? Why isn't the home supposed to be that launch pad or the base of operations for that portion of our lives?
Right. Right. Yeah. I think that that's such a big problem now, is that we've become so focused on, or we touched on this a bit earlier, but just that we started to identify ourselves with mm-hmm. what we do. And, you know, I think in some ways this has become, it was something that probably, I think I touched on this too, that, you know, when men make their home seem like just their launch pad for the world, it really encourages women to see what they're doing at home as being being something tedious, something unimportant, and something that they want to escape from. And if, you know, if the big deal is what you do out in the world, then, well, I want that big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think a really mutually supportive, loving partnership and marriage is going to be where our days might look different. You know, my husband might be out in the world working all day while I'm, you know, nursing a baby or whatever. But really, I know that he's out there doing that for the sake of us. And that this is not, you know, he's not coming home and this is just, yeah, his launch pad for the sake of his next day.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, one of the things he does is when he comes home, and I know some other men who, and I know a lot of other men do this too, but he will take a minute and just sort of refocus his mind and heart to, you know, thinking about this being the pinnacle of his day. Like, this is where, this is what really matters when I walk through this door. And this is where my day really comes to its height, because this is where the rubber meets the road, and this is where my ultimate vocation. So I think just that mindset of being really having a theology of home for men too, and you know, I think that's one of the points that we touch on too. It's just that this is not, you know, it's mostly a woman's book, but it really is for the family,
mm-hmm.
being that family unit as a whole. A comprehensive whole rather than a really limited kind of division.
Definitely. So where can people find your book, Theology of Home, Finding the Eternal in the Everyday?
Well, we have links to it on our site, theologyofhome.com. We have a shop, COHmercantile.com, that's linked there. But it's also on Amazon and at Tan Books.
Excellent. Well, Noelle, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending with us. Any closing thoughts?
Great. It was great to be with you, and I hope that everyone who sees the book just really finds it to be beautiful and meditative and encouraging read, and visually and intellectually. So thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. With that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Redbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at KaneFord.com.